from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia. This is Cleats and Cufflinks.
Welcome to another episode of Cleats and Cufflinks. I'm here with Dusty Rhodes. Dusty, how you doing? How was your weekend?
Weekend was surprising, both days, actually. The games that went on this weekend were... The game on the first day had another amazing comeback. I know we talked about that last week, but it seems to be the sort of the calling card of this particular season. Seeing a lot more comebacks than we have in previous seasons over longer stretches of time. Teams are maintaining control a little bit longer, and they're coming back from deficits that we weren't sure they could come back from before.
Yeah, I mean, we called the game together down in D.C. on Saturday, the D.C. New York game, and I don't know, they were down 5 with like 5 minutes left. This game is clearly over.
Yeah, it was 16-11 was the last moment that they were down 5. And that's pretty late in the game, considering that they won 21-19. It's a 10... Is that a 10-3 run.
10-3 run,
Over the last maybe 9 minutes or so.
Crazy. That was a crazy game. And the best part is that the catch that started that, which is Mott's catch...
Yeah.
It was on SportsCenter.
I just learned about that this morning.
Today. Yeah.
Yeah. That's
so today is in yesterday because I won't post this podcast till tomorrow. So temporal alignments being what they are.
And it was fantastic that he got one specific play that was able to sort of encapsulate what he had done during that game, because he was just scoring goals over and over again when New York needed goals.
Yeah, he did a whole lot of that.
So it's nice to see a little bit of reward there, getting on the Sports Center.
Yeah, fantastic. And then he didn't do so much of that the next day.
I think he also scored maybe one goal, maybe two, got an assist the second day. But the problem that second day was just that Philadelphia came out ready to go from the jump, and New York seemed a little bit either confident or just not into it yet or something, and Philly just jumped all over them.
Yeah.
So watching that game happen, I think that was probably the most out of hand game that I've been on hand for, and that includes the championship game the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Because both of those were kind of blowouts.
Yep.
But this game felt totally out of control very soon. It was a 10-1 lead very quickly.
Yeah. Philly really, really got right into that game. But the interesting thing about it is we've had a bunch of two-game weekends so far, and teams are winning games on their two-game
every single weekend. Time so far. Every team that's had a two-game weekend has won at least one game, if not two. And this coming weekend, we'll get a chance to see two teams go on their two-game road trips. We'll see both of the cellar dwellers right now. The
both looking teams, for their first win.
Looking for their first win and maybe their second win.
Yeah.
But they might already put themselves after this one weekend at 0-5, which means you can't finish above 500 for the season, and your chances of making the playoffs start to get a little dimmer already this early.
It is early to get that dimness. Both those teams need to get a win out of this coming weekend. Well, it's exciting to be back here in the studio. Looking forward to another weekend. Before we get into the meat of our podcast,
we have potatoes too.
We'll start with an appetizer of a sponsor and say thank you to Heavy Seas Brewing Company.
As always.
And today we are having Crossbones, which is their session IPA. And while I open mine, maybe you can tell the folks what we're getting into, a little bottle copy.
Sure, I love the bottle copy. It's one of my favorite things about beer, aside from the beer. Full-on hop aroma with surprisingly rich mouthfeel, this session IPA delivers a broad side of flavor without getting your powder wet. It's good. You wouldn't want wet powder.
No,
it would turn into a paste.
I assume that's referring to the relatively low alcohol content, 4.5%.
With the session IPA, that's one of the big sort of American brewing styles that has taken off over the last handful of years.
It's a real thing, and it's a thing that I'm very happy it's happened.
Because we talk about dad beers.
Dad beers. Yeah. Everybody talks about dad beers, and usually that's referring to some sort of domestic macro brew thing, but. You got the kids running around, things like that.
Right.
It's a Saturday afternoon. You would like a beverage out in the sun in your yard, but you don't want to be an irresponsible parent.
Specifically, if you have lawn mowing duties.
Yeah, you can't drink a triple IPA and then go weed whacking. It's not a good idea.
Nor play sports of coordination or anything generally that requires your body to function.
Yeah, precisely. So, with that in mind, of course, our typical disclaimer, enjoy your heavy seas responsibly, as Dusty and I do every week.
Cheers.
Cheers. Mm. Oh, that's very good. I like that a lot.
There's definitely the hoppiness in there.
Yeah, yeah. That's nice.
The usual thing with session IPAs for me is that they tend to remove a lot of the maltiness, which is my least favorite thing about hoppy beers.
It's working out for you perfectly.
We've talked about this before. I just generally want hop water.
Yeah.
That's what I'm after.
I like that. All right. There should be a beer called that, so I'm gonna make some phone calls.
I'm sure it's in the tubes somewhere.
Yeah, I'll make some phone calls. So today, also, you're wearing we got our jersey placement of the day.
We're doing this early.
Yeah, I'm gonna jump right into it here early. We have Green Means Go.
Indeed.
Tell us about
Green Means Go. Is the Philadelphia women's team.
Indeed. Yeah.
Coached by Jeff George, one of our former teammates and person at large in the Philadelphia Ultimate
team. Person at large.
This past weekend, they played down at the Beth Coltman Memorial Tournament, also referred to as Henlopen, because it's in Cape Henlopen.
Right by Rehoboth in Delaware, yep.
Down near the, there's lovely beach out there. The beach communities of Delaware are actually kind of fantastic.
Beautiful. Good disc golf course there, too.
Yeah, it's right nearby. I haven't got to play the whole thing yet, but it's decent.
It's tough. I picked up some ticks on it the one time I went.
Well, that's, you're in the...
This'll happen.
I was going to say, you're in the wild of the Mid-Atlantic.
Yeah, that's Mid-Atlantic wild.
Ticks are what happened.
Ticks are
so what happened. So they had good early season success. Having been around Philadelphia for a while and all of that, I like to see Philadelphia teams doing well. Being part of the Mid-Atlantic, I like to see lots of quality teams in all of the divisions because that's what makes Ultimate more fun for me to watch.
Absolutely.
Shout out to Green Means Go. It's a good start to the season. And based on the last couple of years, they'll be right in the running for nationals when we get around to regionals and all of that.
That's what I like to see.
Yeah.
Yeah, Philadelphia represent.
Yep.
Green Means Go. All right. So today we're going to talk about, we got a handful of things to talk about. I'm going to start with a rule change.
I love rule changes.
Yeah, I know you do. And, you know, it's not common that you make changes to the rules in the flow of the season, but there are times when the change is so obvious. And, you know, looking at feedback from fans, from players, from coaches, from refs, this was a really obvious change we needed to make. So basically, in the course of an MLU game, teams have three timeouts per half.
Yep.
And with the half field pull rule that we instituted last year, did we institute it last year?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was last year.
To be fair, it was during one of my first games as an announcer. And I just sort of lost track of it. So when the half field pull was first happening, I didn't know what was happening.
Like, what is going on?
And it was my responsibility to communicate what was happening. And I felt very out of sorts. And I realized, yes, there's more work to do for this commentating thing than you may have originally realized. But quickly, there are leagues that do mid-season rules changes as well.
Like it does happen.
The NHL is not notorious. A positive word for notorious.
Whatever that is.
Making little adjustments.
Infamous? No, that's not right.
To sort of what they do during the season if something becomes clear to them that, there's an exploitation here or it's not safe for the players, anything like that. So it's just unusual.
It's unusual. Yeah. It's not unprecedented. And so anyway, the half-field pull rule, you can basically, if you call a timeout between points and you're the pulling team,
right,
you can then pull from half-field. That's the way the rule was written. It's been, I think, surprisingly effective as a rule. It's offered an opportunity for teams to get back into games, mm-hmm. creates a lot of excitement for the fans around the opportunity to get a Callahan, but also just is an ability to kind of put pressure on.
That's the key for me.
That was key, right?
I like to see good offenses under pressure.
Absolutely. And then here's the problem, though, that we discovered. And it's a problem with pacing and with timing of the game, because basically what would happen is you'd call that timeout between points, a timeout that you didn't really need or want.
You just wanted the result.
You were doing it
to
get the result, which was that half field pull. So now instead of having the normal at 45 seconds between points, you now have 90 plus 45. So you have the timeout plus the normal time between the points. And so teams, it just took the wind out of the game, and you could watch it happen. Like fans start to get distracted. Even in a close game, people get distracted. We're going to commercial. It felt like the end of a basketball game does sometimes.
When we're using all of the timeouts,
and
we're
using
all of the intentional fouls,
and all
of the free throws, and the last 2 minutes of the game actually take half an hour.
And a lot of the time, and I remember this, from watching a lot of college basketball when I was younger, you kind of lose track of the game a little bit.
Yeah.
You lose your intensity and you're
yeah.
like,
well,
feels, it's, but it's part of that game, but we didn't want that here.
Well, and you also have a small skill contest in basketball to do during the interim. So there is something to watch.
Yeah.
As an announcer, one of the things that became clear during this is we had a lot of time to fill with all of yeah. these timeouts.
Yeah.
And we weren't quite cognizant beforehand of how much time it was going to be and what sort of things we should sort of fill that time up with. So yeah, the announcers noticed it as well.
Yeah,
I may have submitted a couple complaints to the rules committee about that.
We've heard from you.
Yes, but you've heard from far more important people than the guy sitting and yapping about the game. So
it is. I mean, it has been consistent. Players, coaches, and particularly fans. You know, yeah. and we do. Even though you know we make rules and we stick to certain things, we do try to listen to what people are telling us about our game and try to make things better. So. The rule change that will be instituted for this weekend, for the first time, will be instead of a full timeout, if you're going to take a half field pull, mm-hmm. you get a 20-second timeout. It basically just gives us enough time to reset the field, get the refs in the right position, and for the opposing team to at least realize what's happening and put out the correct line.
Right.
So you have a 20-second timeout now instead of a full timeout. And I'm excited to see it. I think it's going to make the game flow a lot better.
Yeah.
It'll also make things easier on the post-production end. For games that we cut for broadcast,
so you don't have those
they have to
breaks.
Fit exactly in a two-hour window. So we have to cut them down anyway. And when you have those extra breaks, it just makes it a nightmare.
Well, and yeah, one of the things is that ultimately it's a game of back and forth, and pull comes along pretty quickly, and the pace of the game over the whole of it, and I like the small amount of time we have in between points generally.
Yeah.
This had been much different from that experientially during
yep.
the games.
Yep.
I like the idea that we're taking a look at that, seeing where it goes next.
I'm excited. So
one of my suggestions was just that you could remove the offsides rule and have, if a team steps offsides, that counts as a midfield pull. So you wouldn't have to declare that you have a midfield pull. You would either just like walk up to the 50-yard line and pull.
And surprise them.
Right. Or you would accidentally be offsides, and that would take away one of your abilities to midfield pull. So I had been trying to attack this from a number of different overly creative ways, which tends to be the way I deal with it. But I like the idea of just shortening the time. That's good.
Yeah, I think it'll be it's a simple solution that we can institute now. Everybody will get it. So look for that. Coming up this weekend, we'll talk about it next week and see how it goes.
He's going to be excited about it. He didn't like those breaks.
Pretty much everyone's going to be excited. It's funny, you make these little changes and you don't necessarily always understand the full consequences. Okay. All we did was add a timeout.
That's literally every rule or law everywhere, is you try to anticipate the consequences, but the unintended consequences just pile on each other as you have these more and more complex rule sets or law sets.
They jump up and bite you, no question about it. So yeah, we'll get that in next week. The other thing I wanted to talk about today a little bit was the live streaming thing, and this is kind of a bigger conversation. So we've made an effort to try to live stream all our games, right? That's the thing that we talked about a couple weeks ago. We talked about why that's important or why we think it's important. What we didn't talk about as much is what doing that entails. And the kind of both operationally, technologically, et cetera. So I wanted to talk a little bit about that today. Now, you're involved in this in two capacities, really.
Huh.
You're involved in actually calling games,
right.
But then you're also involved in the script writing and prep for all these games. So, the big thing that when I talk to people about this, they see just the end point.
Right.
And sometimes that end point's good, sometimes it's not so good. But they see the end point and they don't see the web that is supporting it and all the infrastructure. I was actually talking to Matt Gray, our director of production, earlier today, and he, I wanted to get an idea of the scope, right? So we've done 3 weeks of games, and we're doing, for contractors and for part-time people, we pay people kind of monthly.
Mm-hmm.
So he's doing payroll for those first 3 weeks. His payroll for the first 3 weeks is 38 people.
Ooh.
So he's had to go out and hire and manage and pay, most importantly.
Right, when it comes down to brass tacks.
Exactly.
I've done a job here.
38 people we've been in 7 cities so far.
Mm-hmm.
So 38 people in 7 different cities in order to get these live streams up and out.
And that's literally just production.
That's just production.
Like video and
so it's camera
support.
Operators, it's commentators, it's some support staff,
But that doesn't include statisticians, for example, which also contribute to our ability to live stream with accurate stats and all. So there's even more that goes into it than that outside of who you're paying directly for it.
To do it well, there's a lot.
I mean, that doesn't, and theoretically, that doesn't even count like the refs and the players, right? So you can't have the live stream.
Obviously you could extrapolate this all the way out. I think we do payroll for
I have a tendency to do that myself.
I think we do payroll for something like 480 some people during the course of the season, like each month. When you put all those people in place, something like that. And every time I think about that number, I it keeps me up for 3 hours.
I hope they're all okay. I hope we take care of everything for them. I hope they have everything they need. I hope it goes well. Right.
I really do, man. And it's a lot of people to hope that for.
Yeah.
But I think that one of the things, so that's the one thing, is it's a big operation, and that's important to realize. And it's big too because we're doing more this year. I think from the outside, sometimes the endpoints don't necessarily look that much more complicated.
Right.
But trying to do everything live is significantly more complicated. There's sort of a hierarchy in the way that we look at it, right? And we talked a little bit about this before, but basically the most important thing is that we have a camera at a game covering it.
To simply record that it happened.
That is by far the most important thing. And it has to be at every game. And that's archival, that's for stats, that's for adjudication of calls, for all the things that the league has to do to operate, to know who played.
Right, it's just a very simple way of, that's how we legitimize what we're doing. We have a record of it. This is what happened. You can compare these games versus the other games. This is one of the things that got me excited about working with the MLU in the first place, is I can compare players over time. I can compare teams over time. I can compare their performance from before, and just all these, go back and watch old tape if I want to, figure out what they were doing before that they're not doing anymore.
Exactly. And that's the primary thing, right? So that has to happen. And that has happened. We've done that every year.
I think there's
one missing point, right, which drives Luke, our head statistician, insane.
I like to just mention that to him in passing.
The amount of research that he's done to try to surround this point.
Historical interviews.
And understand it. Yeah, he's gone back to players that don't even play for us anymore. Do you remember who threw this guy?
I like the dedication.
Yeah, I like the dedication. It's borderline obsessive. It might actually just be obsessive.
That might just be the job description of stat guy.
That is absolutely the job description. You have that as our baseline. And then in order to make a game at all watchable, in order for it to matter to a fan at all, you have to have a clock and scoreboard.
Yeah.
So you have to have that graphic piece. That graphic piece involves technology, involves people to make it, to run it while the thing is going. So now you have a two-person operation. You have your camera guy and you have your person working on the graphic stuff, right? We do this in a couple of different ways. Sometimes we do it live at a game. Sometimes the graphic people are here in our production studio. Video comes back, they add the graphics and send it back out. A few different ways of doing it. And it's an experiment and an evolution to try to figure out what's best. So that's next. You got to have that. And really, to make a game watchable, you need commentary as well. Because there's a lot of things that happen on the field puff yourself up a little bit.
That's this guy.
And that's the thing, is you need, there's stuff that is happening. There's ref signals. There's things that, the commentator needs to know and be able to explain. And then there's also putting the game in context. Mm-hmm. Sports are generally boring without context. You need to know why this game matters, why that throw mattered, why this point matters, who that player is, as you said, looking back over the years, and why what they just did is so impressive. All that context makes the game more fun, more exciting. And that's the next layer, right? And then the layer above it is the one we're talking about now, is the game is better if it's live.
Right.
So how do we get it to people live?
Yeah. Oh, and that you haven't even gotten into the thing where sometimes you have more than one camera. So then you not only need people to operate the separate cameras, you need to deal with the separate cameras coming in. So you have someone sitting there doing that.
You got to switch. Have
people doing replays and things like that. There's all that. Those booths get crowded for some of these stadiums. For some of them, spacious. New and spacious.
Lots of room. For some of them, very small. We love the multi-camera thing. I think that's the future of where we're going to go with all of our games. We'd like to get to a point where we're able to do that for everything. Right now, we only do it if we have a broadcast partner who can make that effort financially viable, right? So when we do games for Comcast in Philly and the Mid-Atlantic, we get half of the ad inventory that we can resell, and that can fund the production of those games. So that's why we're able to add cameras there. And we're working on deals in other places, so hopefully we can get there, and maybe next year we'll have some other media deals that will make that possible.
I'm excited about that already.
Yeah. The thing that is important, though, here is that, you know, and when we put out our press release on this in the beginning that we were going to try to do this, we acknowledged that there were going to be times where this did not work great.
Right.
And one of the main reason for that right now at the stage we're at is connectivity.
It's because we don't all have chips in our heads.
We do not have head chips. And we're working on the head chips.
We're not all connected automatically to the internet when we're born yet.
No, right? No. It's coming, though. That's coming.
Unavoidably. Skynet's on the way.
Skynet would make live streaming so much easier.
And then this is how we get to Skynet in the first place.
It's just Frisbee,
you know,
live
what?
Streaming. Oh, man, the day that our live streaming computer becomes sentient.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Yeah, that's going to be trouble. But we, you know, so stadiums for us, we rent stadiums for people, right? We don't own any stadiums. I think that's pretty clear.
Right.
I think anyone's been to our games knows that probably by the emblem in the middle of the field that we do not own any of the stadiums we play. So in not owning them, we have a certain lack of control, and we work very hard to book stadiums with internet. So in that process, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-ish stadiums have like good hard line. Fully wired in.
I was going to say, what's the ish? Because I think where the rest of this conversation is going, when you don't have that hard connection.
Exactly. So take DC, for example. DC has actually been pretty good for us.
And they've upgraded that press box from the last year.
Press box is beautiful, but it's still a bridge system. Meaning there's an antenna on top of the press box that's picking up a wireless signal from the main building.
Oh, from like the gym that's
and
just
across
the way.
And then we plug into that. So we have a hard wire in, but it's still a wireless signal. So a good example of that is if you watch the first DC game, we had a couple interruptions in the stream because we had 25-mile-an-hour winds that were battering away on that antenna, and every now and then we lost our connection to that feed, right?
I knew that happened. I didn't know why. Now I do.
Yeah. And, you know, and again, that's kind of speculation even, because all of this has a level of speculation. You don't always know exactly what's going wrong. Portland. It's a wireless in Portland. Uh-huh. Now we're trying to figure out a way to plug into that system so that we're not relying on the wireless. Because the problem is, we go out and test. Matt Gray and I went out west and we tested each stadium. And we're like, okay, the signal's pretty good. We got a good stream going back. But then when we get there to shoot game day, and we find that there are 50, 60 people that have the password to this because they work for the school, are logged onto it and are using that to, you know, take pictures and update Instagram and Twitter. And now that bandwidth that we have available to us has shrunk.
Because it's not dedicated.
Exactly. So now the signal that we're getting back from Portland is grainy and is low bit rate. Right?
And this is even one of the things that comes up in the press box. People are always like, hey, can I get your wireless password? And they're just like, no, you can't. That will affect our streaming. That's a problem.
Exactly. And so that's like another stage, right? So that's the wireless thing. And then the bottom stage is if we don't have internet at all at the stadium. In that case, we have to try to rely on cellular signals. Again, we went out and we tested these at each stadium.
Yeah.
Tested the cell signal. We were able to stream a good, solid stream back. We're like, okay, we're going to roll the dice and we're going to try to do this. That's very different testing a cell signal in an empty stadium than one with hundreds of people in it who are on their cell phones.
As it turns out, most people do this during games. Not just MLU, just games
generally.
Games
in general, people are on their phones. And so when we see the game from this past weekend from Seattle, we just weren't able to get that game up because there were too many people also using that cellular network. The bandwidth was shoddy and it was dropping in and out on us. And it's a known risk.
Yeah.
You know, and it's part of the risk of live events in general. Live events are all about marketing uncertainty.
You guys don't own an MLU satellite yet that you can just link up to directly?
Yeah, see, you gotta the only
put
way
it into orbit.
The only way around this uncertainty is to play in a dome. To have hardline internet. Like it's not even just the live streaming, right? Like the first weekend was miserable weather. you know, San Francisco, it hadn't rained in like a month, and it did all of the raining on opening day. So you put on the event, you get it all ready, you get ready to go. There's nothing you can do about that.
About what happens next.
It gets rained on. And that's the risk of a live scheduled event. And the same thing goes for the live stream. We get there. We had an issue last year when we got to Portland to shoot a game. And, you know, the stadium staff didn't quite understand our setup and had locked the access panel to the internet. And, I mean, you're just done.
Back GMing the very first year with DC, we had issues with the press box all the time. And yeah, we eventually got them solved, but some of the solutions that we had to do on a given weekend were possibly of questionable legality and possibly like not really the best way to solve the problem. You know, it's in the past. We didn't break anything. You know, we actually came clean to the folks who ran that stadium and were like, we did this. We locked up after we left. We left everything where we found it. We cleaned up.
Yep.
And they were essentially like, yeah, don't do that. we didn't know that you needed that. Well, you know, we had that conversation and tried to work backwards from there or work forwards from there to figure out how to do it in the future. But those moments where you're just trying to solve this problem that just seems to apparate out of nothing.
So many of those problems. And, you know, that's the thing, too, is like, you know, for people out there who are watching our streams and who occasionally are frustrated when we don't get it right, because it happens.
Yeah.
Know that it is not for a lack of effort.
Mm-hmm.
There are people working very hard to try to fix it, very hard to get it undertaken, and it cannot be more painful to anyone other than us when those things don't go perfectly. You know, it's just a challenge, and you know the challenges in running this thing in general. You're always trying to limit uncertainty, so if you can book.
Starting to understand why that's not my job anymore.
Yeah,
I like to increase uncertainty.
Yeah, I know. I'm a big fan of that. If you can, you know, right now we don't own stadiums, right? We rent stadiums, and that introduces a lot of uncertainty. Are they going to remember to unlock the press box? Are we going to have access to the scoreboard? You know, are we going to get, you know, a noise complaint that makes us have to turn the PA down?
Like, I remember that now, too.
There's endless.
Some of these games are on Sunday when it's supposed to be quiet.
Yeah. And there's just endless like question marks all the time. And so you manage those the best you can. And one of the things that we're looking at doing with the live stream is we've come to a point where we realize that relying on our ability to book a stadium with internet is not an effective approach. We know now from experience that it's just very hard to book stadiums. And while we make that a top priority when we book, you're not going to get it for every city. You're going to get a percentage that doesn't have it. So we need to take that uncertainty out by saying we need to be able to stream from anywhere.
Yeah.
And there's technology out there that may work for that. It's always new and evolving. So we're talking to a few new potential partners to try to make that sort of thing happen. Whether or not it comes together in the next few weeks or for next year, we don't know. But that's the way that you try to solve these problems is you get rid of your assumptions of having a thing and make yourself as self-reliant as possible.
I had when I worked at a summer camp years ago, it was a summer camp for smart kids, CTY, shout out to all you CTY kids out there. We had an office manager, and on the very first day when we were working there, he wrote up on the board, like money, just the word money.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, imagine this word money is your budget. Then he erased all of it. And just left a little tiny part of the why on there. He's like, okay, that's your actual budget. So whatever you think that you're going to get from us in order to do the thing that you're going to do, imagine that it's less. Imagine that you cannot rely on that and we're not going to help you. And then, once you come up with a way to do it without anything, we'll figure out how to help you. Oh.
That's
interesting.
That reminds me of my initial conversations with Matt Gray every year.
How can we do it with less?
Can we do this without money?
The other part of the issue, it's not really part of the issue, but one of the reasons folks get frustrated is because you can actually deliver it a number of times. So they start to expect that we'll be able to deliver live streams all the time. So when it's not there, there's sort of I planned my time around watching this game tonight, or I was planning on checking this out. So if you didn't have any success, it'd be a lot easier to deal with people wondering why the live stream wasn't there because they're not used to it. But so
nothing ruins your position in the world like a little bit of success.
Just a little bit. Just that's, a little. That's bit. The tough part.
A little bit of success.
So I mean, one of the reasons that we're trying to capture all these games, as we mentioned, is to look back at players who have done things during the game that may have either escaped notice,
misbehavior,
or
perhaps.
Maybe we've the refs have over punished or over affected or totally missed. So one of the things that we talk about when we deal with MLU players, we have the banned system.
Right. So let's reiterate that system a little bit first.
Sure.
Right. It's sort of a card system from.
It's essentially the same, except you get a band on your arm.
Yeah.
So that, and I think this is useful actually, considering the number of players that are on the field who rotate in and out.
Yep.
So you can't always remember and keep it straight whether a fan or an announcer or the refs have to. They write it. There's a reason for all of that.
Yeah.
But like,
yeah.
For all of us, it helps a little bit to have a visual reminder.
That was really the idea behind it. The rotation of people in and off the field sort of made that feel like a necessity. And I think it's worked out pretty well. The bands a year or so ago that were like blood pressure cuffs, I did not like those.
Right.
That was a poor design choice. They look like swimmies.
Yeah. Well, but then you also have issues of different players have different size arms.
Yeah, well, that came up this past weekend, didn't it?
As it turns out, one of the players that we're talking about here is Matt Esser got banded, and he's got large arms. So he was inquiring after if they had different size bands for different players.
I think he said, do you have adult size bands or something like that? Yeah.
And I've mentioned this before, but I've been run into by Matt Esser, and I'm not sure if it's adult size bands so much as beast size bands. He's a man who can apply force to objects, including himself.
He's a solid fella.
So the reason that we've got these bans is because not all fouls are created equal, essentially.
Yeah.
Is that there are some fouls that just occur, there's a little marking foul or whatever that happens, game moves on. But there are other fouls that either put players at risk, either the player committing the foul or the player who has the foul committed against them. Or you have just sort of egregious weirdness, sort of egregious like rule rule offenses.
Yeah.
Sort of things like, so the refs have a number of different reasons they can give bans, but generally it's for something that's out of bounds. And it's not only this specific instance that you want to discourage, but you want to make sort of a statement that this is precisely the sort of play that we are vigilant about.
Yeah.
And the sort of thing that we want to prevent. Specifically with the sort of plays that are questionable, and again, sorry, Matt Esser, to use your name over and over again, but we've talked...
especially in this context.
Yeah, he and I talked about this a little bit, because there was a band where he got banded last week, not this past weekend, but I guess 2 weeks ago, where the player was sort of trying to get a little more yardage or get a little more position on a swing pass, and he was like, I think I have a chance at that disc, and laid out, and he just cleaned him out.
It was, it was kind of a textbook football tackle.
Yeah, and it's that sort of moment where you have to give a ban for that.
Yeah.
Whether he intended to do it or not, he did not intend to tackle the guy, but he ended up tackling the guy. So it's that notion of whether you intended to do this or not, you can't do that. You have to be cleaner with this. You have to be
clumsy.
You have to make that bit with more care.
Yeah.
And more awareness.
And the band is the thing that makes you think about it
right.
when you go to do it the next time.
And the moment and the way that he responded to that moment was critical to me as one of the broadcasters for that game. Is he basically was like, yes, I deserve that band. We are going to go down these next 40 yards. There was no complaint.
Nodding about it as soon as he stood up. And he made sure the guy he nearly destroyed was okay.
So it's that notion of what's the purpose of all of this? Why do we have to have these bans? And it's not about intent. This is one of the things that comes up with the rules of Ultimate very frequently is, well, did you intentionally break the rules or did you unintentionally break the rules? And whether you intend or don't intend to lay out into somebody or to make a dangerous play, it doesn't matter. You made the dangerous play and that's the issue.
Yeah.
Your intent is irrelevant to whether you tackle someone or not.
Our entire rule set attempts to take judgment of intent out of the question, right? That's the way that the refs are trained. That's what we want to do. So, take the tip rule.
Yeah.
Like you're allowed to self-mac because the ref shouldn't have to decide whether or not you did that on purpose. It would be like if somebody threw an alley-oop in basketball and it went in the basket.
Which happens.
And the ref came over and went, no, were you passing that? Or were you trying to shoot it?
I was passing it. To the net.
To the net. So, we wanted to take that kind of intent thing out. And that's particularly applicable here because whether it's intentional or not, as you said, it's still the kind of play you need to get a handle on and get out of the game. It goes for repetitive fouls, too. If you have somebody who's fouling on the mark over and over, at some point, you know, you have to get their attention in a little more strong way than just a 10-yard penalty.
This is, in soccer, this is referred to as persistent infringement of the laws of the game.
Persistent infringement.
And the key for soccer is these are not rules. These are laws of the game.
Yeah, they are laws.
If we want to talk about rules that take themselves a little too seriously, the wording of soccer rules starts off on a really interesting note.
I don't know that I've ever read the actual rules. I think I'm going to have to go and do that
now. Well, they have a short version that, you know, basically contains the laws of the game.
The Reader's Digest version.
Then the interpretations document and all of that adds a lot of heft to the FIFA soccer rules.
I'm going to check this out.
Different soccer associations can do it a little differently and all of that. But I've been reading a lot of rules over the last couple of years. The more I've gotten involved with both MLU and coaching and all of that, I'm just trying to understand where ultimate rules came from, how they got to be the way they are, how they compare to other sports. It's, for me, it's fascinating.
Are we expecting some writing on this?
I have so much writing to do on this that during the season, there's no chance that it's going to get done.
This will be the off-season coffee table book on sports rules.
I'd love to have that.
I'm looking forward to it.
We'll
talk to Dan Vogel. He just sent me a children's book that he's worked on, which is amazing, by the way. The Ultimate Counting Book. You can get that on Amazon. My son loves it.
Ultimate Counting Book?
It's awesome. It's a little like children's, like, what do they call it? A board book.
Oh, okay. So like they're heavier.
Yeah, yeah.
Not a pop-up book. It's adorable. But just a thick board book.
It's absolutely adorable. It's fantastic work. We're running a little bit low on time. So the last thing I wanted to get in there was where you started this conversation, and that was that bans are a tool that the refs have to protect players, to calm a game down if it's getting chippy, and then there's sometimes occasionally a player does something that's actually really egregious, or a coach, and you know.
And there have been some instances like that in the MLU.
There have, and you make those corrections. There's instances in that in every level of Ultimate. We've all seen the videos of people flipping out at club games. We were involved in a game.
I was going to say,
got punched.
Or we can just remember some of them.
So it happens, and this is just a way of like calming people down, and if necessary, sending them off to the locker room.
Right.
Because two bans will send you off to the locker room, and three bans accumulated over games will get you a game suspension.
Right. So that's part of the.
And that's
the key for the
video.
I didn't mean to just step on your transition there. I was so excited.
You were like, "Oh, I see where he's going." So I'm getting back to your video thing. We capture all this video so that we can improve our refereeing. So Steve goes through all the video and sends notes to the referees in various cities to improve the refereeing. But also the ban situation. Bans can be reviewed and can be could be overturned or even added after a game. The head referee has discretion to award bans where they may have been missed in actual gameplay. And players have the right to request a review and get bans overturned.
Right.
And that review is done by a coach, a referee, and a player from the opposing conference. So it's not anyone involved in the current competition making the judgment, but they'll judge it based on the statements from the ref, statements from the player, and the video evidence.
I got video evidence. It just
video
it
evidence.
Almost never lies. Almost never lies.
Almost never lies. I just like the words video evidence. We have that.
Yeah, one of the best things in Frisbee is that we're at the point now where you can not only with the MLU, but you can go back and look at all these games that happen, and people are finding tapes and finding video that they had, and they're like, oh, now there's. You know, people who are looking for that. Just the
and there's an easy way to get it out to the world now too. It's not a videotape you got to send somebody or a DVD you have to burn. Like you can just put it up there online. We're pretty much out of time today. But I think look for that timeout rule change. Live streaming this weekend we'll be sending out actually a statement that will list kind of where people should expect that we might have some problems because we know now. Now that the season started.
Oh, for the live streaming.
We know which stadiums have a little bit of issues, so we're going to send out a revised statement of our live streaming schedule that gives people an actual kind of probability that we'll be able to put a good stream up. And we're also working on getting games back here, geography being what it is. Getting them back here from the West Coast has been somewhat problematic. So this weekend we have, you're going to both Boston and New York.
Yes, I'm following DC around this weekend. Yep. One of my favorite things about this schedule this year, both for my broadcasting and for the double game weekends, is that for a lot of them, I get to watch the same team Saturday and Sunday. tells me a lot about them, tells me a lot about how they respond, what the different strategies that they use are for different opponents. It's great.
So we'll look for you with DC at Boston, and then on Sunday, DC at New York. And then we have Portland at Vancouver and Vancouver at Seattle. So two games from DC, two games from Vancouver. Going to be an exciting weekend to see if either of those teams can get some positive marks on the board.
Big opportunities for both those teams. Also big risks.
Big
for
risks. Both those teams. Should be an exciting weekend. You can, of course, reach out to me at Nick Darling on Twitter, N-I-C Darling. Or you can get Dusty at
D-U-S-T-W-E-E-T-R. I'm getting better at that.
You are getting better. Dust Twitter. or you can get us both at Cleats Cufflinks. Thank you, as always, for joining us. And we'll see you next week.